Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. And welcome to the show. This week we will review 13 Ghosts. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. But before we talk about Chapelwaite, I wanted to mention what we're doing this month. And it, I mean, 4 weeks, right? It'll be like four weeks of remakes.
So as a as a little appetizer, a little appy for our Halloween spread, right?
Yeah. The main dish.
We're going to give you some remakes. Real quick, there's a funny meme I saw where it was basically a conversation people had online, and it said, what are some like really good apps I should be getting right now? And one guy was like, I don't know, man, you can never go wrong with like mozzarella sticks, like nachos. Like, he's not wrong.
Onion rings. Some good onion rings. Hell yeah. But so we picked some interesting disgustable. Is that a word, disgustable?
Disgustable. When you're disgusting things, disgustable.
I'm making up words. I just thought it'd be fun to talk about remakes.
Oh, we both took an alcohol drink break right now.
We did. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking New Belgium's 1985 IPA by Voodoo Ranger, or the Voodoo Ranger 1985 IPA. It's delicious. It's a little bit fruity. It's strong. It's got a cool can. So sponsor us, New Belgium. Sponsor us and give us all the fat tar we want.
Hell yeah. I will say fat tire got us through college.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. And also Miller High Life.
Yeah, the opposite. Yeah. But yeah. Please sponsor us. I am drinking a daiquiri, but it's a fast daiquiri.
Oh.
So
it's a slut.
It's a very slushy.
Drinking a slutty daiquiri.
Slutty daiquiri. So,
sponsor us, slutty daiquiris.
Slutty daiquiris, please sponsor us, please. So remakes. Well, I don't know. I guess we should say that for after TV Corner. But I think it'd be fun to talk about remakes in general. What is your let's mix up the show, why not, right?
Yeah.
what is your thoughts on remakes?
I mean, for the most part, now if something's being remade, I'm assuming it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
But there was a brief period of time in the 90s, if things got remade, you were like, whoa, what is this shit? Because you probably didn't know it was a remake.
Right. And that's an interesting point. There's a lot of movies that I saw that I didn't know were remakes. One of my all-time favorite movie is a remake. Little Shop of Horrors. No, but like The Thing is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, yes. A remake. That's right.
And of course, another favorite is like The Fly. And,
yeah.
Stuff like that. So there's definitely a pedigree. We're not going to review any of those great prestigious movies. We're going to talk about...
No, we're trying to find the crap. We're trying to find the bottom of the barrel here, guys.
So 13 Ghost is kind of like a random, may seem like a random movie, but I do have like a bit of background with it or things that I can talk about, you know.
Well, I
as
mean,
to why I selected it.
This came out in high school for both of us, so of course we probably went to go watch it in theaters because that's what we did in our small area of Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Theater was a safe haven for sure, going to the movie theater.
But yeah, we got 13 Ghosts, spelled THIR13ENGHOSTS, as things were spelled back then. And it's,
yeah,
you know how you know this movie? Well, you know, they spent most of their budget on everything else outside of the soundtrack. When there isn't a single lick of nu metal, which was the most popular type of music during this time, nothing was more popular than nu metal. And there isn't a single nu metal song in this. I'm not sure about the actual soundtrack you buy, but yeah.
Right. Very interesting. So before we get to all of that, let's just take a quick stop at TV Corner and we will review Chapter 8, Episode 7. John, do you want to again give us the play-by-play on this
episode? So this one, our boy finally finds the book.
Yeah,
that was buried with who?
His kids. The dead kids.
Yeah,
the kids that the wife got buried. She killed the kids. There was like a flashback. Yeah. And she put the book with the kids.
So he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he immediately, I guess, like ropes it to his chest.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Like I automatically thought of like a suicide bomber for some reason. And then
that's a good description. Yeah.
It slowly makes him crazy.
Yeah. But then possessing the book will make you crazy. And we find out what's in the book that surprise, surprise, it's the end of end time books.
A bunch of old recipes.
Knocks out
like
the sun.
Pie recipes and
cherry pie.
Or the original chili recipe, which is coveted. And it actually includes beans. Sorry to disappoint and anger the masses, but
it's not chili.
Then
if it has beans,
it's the original recipe is in this book, and it says number one ingredient beans.
This is truly a book from hell. It's a book that adds beans to chili. That's the hill, the chili hill I'm dying on today. Beans, disgusting. I don't even know what that is. What do you even call that?
The Chapel Wait. hold on, sorry, I'm trying to do research at the same time, unfortunately. Okay, here you go. Yeah, he goes a little bit crazy. Emily Hampshire tricks him. And again, it's gotten like cheesy to a point where like you just allow these things to happen, because otherwise I'd be like, how the fuck did that work? And blah blah blah. Cause he's kind of closed off himself into the basement again and has made a bunch of nooses, and there's like this cool reveal of like, you think he's gonna try to kill himself, and then Emily Hampshire's like, no, don't do that, and he's like, no, it's not enough, they're just gonna keep coming after us. And then she sees that there's a bunch of nooses, and she's like, oh
right,
yeah, no, you're totally right. Let me just go get the kids or whatever. I don't want to frighten them. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, you're right, you're right. Yeah. Don't scare him before we kill him. And then she like fucking smacks his head with a shovel. And again, he's fine. Which, by the way, if you do this in real life, which please don't, you could probably cause permanent brain damage. But
yeah,
he like comes to an.
I liked it.
Yeah, that's what I was making fun of earlier. I'm sorry, what?
No, I just wanted to also add that it's the he's become the Shining Dad, right?
Yeah,
he's gone crazy and wants to kill his kids.
Which that's what I was poking fun of in our previous episode, which we totally recorded a week ago, not like 45 minutes ago. Where Adrian Brody's got like all these great facial expressions, but his voice stays the same timbre and like the same octave range and tone. So I can't tell when he's like gone loony or not, or I shouldn't say, I'm trying to be more progressive about my wording. He's mentally unwell and he's like, oh no, we got to kill her. Everybody's got to die because they're just going to keep coming after us. And then he comes back and he's better. He's like, oh, thank you, Emily Hempster. I feel way better now. I bet you can tell by my voice. And for some reason, that was bugging me.
I just like that he's like, oh, the book. What happened to the book? Because it's now not on his chest. And then she begins to explain that they put it on the sheriff's wife. Well, and I love that to the sheriff's wife. She's in a bathtub with the book on her chest.
Which, going back to the beginning of that, I thought it was so stupid that they were trying to like drag out this reveal of what she was talking about, because she's like real vague. Like, what happened to the book? She's like, I brought it back to the undead, which is like, why don't you just come forward with like, oh no, we like got the sheriff's wife in the basement and I have the book fucking attached to her because she's not affected. No, it's like, I gave it back to the undead. He's like, oh no.
It's like, also, no. There's another great scene before the scene we mentioned about when he hangs up the nooses, where Emily Hampshire is with the kids, and the kids are now scared. Okay, so this was very jarring. So he's having these like weird visions and weird behavior, where one scene he is talking to Emily Hampshire, having like a normal conversation with her, kind of like wanting her to be like, oh, I'm losing my mind. The next scene we see him, he's like, I've released all the horses. The next scene, the kids are, he talks, she's like, kids, you have to leave. And the kids are like painting something on the house. And they're like, no, we're not going anywhere. The next scene, the kids are now scared. And they're like, what do we do? We're scared of our dad. And she's like, here, take this, a comically large harpoon she gives to the other daughter. So I thought it was great. And then we cut to the very next scene where he is now putting up the nooses. So it was a very like weird, jarring. I don't know if it was done on purpose, because the whole episode was kind of done like abstractly, you know? Yeah. Kind of like, because it's like he's like having like fever dreams type visions and shit like that. So I don't know if it was done on purpose or just like poorly edited. It was kind of just jarring and kind of funny and in the same respects.
Yeah. It was a weird episode, but then it's got a really fucking like kick-ass ending, I thought.
It did.
Yeah. They go from all this weird stuff where what's his name, Adrian Brody's character,
Charles
is starting to lose his grasp on reality, and then the book is away, and then it's all of a sudden like they're the fucking what were the Corey Feldman and that other guy
in the Frog Brothers?
The Frog Brothers. All of a sudden it's like Frog Brothers mode, and they're like, oh, we gotta prepare because they're gonna come for us.
I love it. Yeah.
Cause that ending was like fucking badass. Jacob is basically telling him like, oh, you think this is going to stop us? I'm going to come up there. I'm going to get you. And then that fucking same harpoon, it's like, bam, shoots him in the fucking chest, starts pulling him up the window. And I just thought it was funny that, what's his uncle's name?
Steven.
Steven.
Or the other one. I forget the other one's name.
He's like, he's basically kind of just in the corner with his hands in the air, like, no, what do I do? What do I do? And he's trying to pull Jacob back down. And there is like a quick moment of Jacob's body is finally being pulled up to the fucking third floor window. And, it's like, he's there and it's like, he's not even really trying to grab him. He's just kind of jumping up stationary with his hands in the air. Like, it's a bad edit cut. Cause it looks like he's not trying at all.
Philip.
Philip, yeah.
Philip gets also shot by this harpoon, and it's basically, so they're trying to figure out, the sheriff, the priest, and Charles are now
His house. Jacob, who's like the main big vampire that I for some reason thought was the same actor as
So Stephen, Philip, and Loa have tried to tell Charles to like give them the book so they can usher in the god and then be in quote unquote this evil god's favor, right? But Jacob also wants the book for basically the same reason, right? He wants to also be possessed and be like this, basically walk among the people, right? Is that the idea now?
I think ultimately they both want to. I think the book gives you control of everything evil, I guess, is the idea. But it also brings darkness to the world forever, as opposed to there being light. Right. Yeah. Something like that. And, something very cheesy and like you, that.
like you were describing Philip, they're like, Stephen's like, Charles, we're here. What have you decided? And they fucking shoot the harpoon out of the second story window, pull up Philip, and with the sheriff and the priest, they figure out how to kill a vampire, which, surprise, surprise, they just cut off its head.
Yeah, well, he does stab him hard in the heart first, which hurts Jacob, and then he cuts his head off. Not Jacob. Yeah. Fuck, I keep saying Jacob. before that, something that gets a little dismissed is the sheriff gets stabbed in the heart also because he pulls him in quickly and gets stabbed, and then that's when Charles, Adrian Brody, goes and stabs him and then cuts his head off, and then like real baller move, flings his fucking head out the window.
That was great, dude. I feel like that's the moment this whole show's been leading up to. This is like exactly what I've been waiting for.
Because his uncle's like, I'm going to drain the blood of all your kids. He's like so mad that his dad is dead. Finally, dead. And then before he can do anything, he realizes that Jacob and his goons, his like little horde of non-vampires, are surrounding the area. And that's the way it ends.
Right. And that's, the only other thing I'll add to that is, Jacob finds out Charles has the book.
Because he can feel it, right? It's like kind of daylight. It's cloudy, and there's
constantly daylight.
Random
that was
dude.
The other note I had.
Yeah, some random dude is like, oh.
So hold on. Let me explain that. So Jacob can feel the book. We have to go to Chapel Waits now because we have to get the book. So he hoards up his cult. And they put him in a coffin and they prop him up on a wagon and they trek over to Chapel Way, right? They leave Jerusalem's lot. And on the way, I guess Jacob needs a snack. So there's this random farmer. This whole, what I'm just going to describe is totally feels like filler, just like random bits.
It was kind of where, funny.
He like, just a farmer watching these, our cult from Jerusalem's lot. Trek Jacob, they stop. Jacob comes out and points at him, and of course his minions are already behind him and begin to painstakingly bring him over.
Homeboy is also like he's watching this, and like anybody else, like any sensible person, is just like in disbelief. Yeah. And he's like, oh shit. So he like immediately turns around, and then those two people are already there, and you get like apple girl, who's like also a victim of overacting, is like, he immediately is like, hey, I didn't see shit. No, he didn't say that, but he was like basically saying that, like, I didn't see shit, bro. I don't know shit. I'm walking away. And they're like, oh, well, you didn't see anything because you're not close enough. And you can see in this guy's face like, ah, fuck.
I want to see John's like, overselling it, but no, that's exactly it. he was behaving. And this guy felt like a writer or like somebody's friend or maybe the director for the episode,
yeah,
kind of acting. And he no disrespect to that man. I'm sure he's working very hard to be an actor. but it's, unfortunately, I don't think he's given the best stuff.
Because he could have been, you know how like an actor will get like that one moment where it's like, I have a small part, but yeah. If I just stand out, you know, like, and these guys don't understand, like, the more you stand out, the less people think you're good. That's just the way it works. Oh, little sidebar real quick. I saw this video of Thundercat was performing. Everybody loves Thundercat. If you don't listen to Thundercat, he's amazing. And this, like, this white woman jumped on stage and, like, walked up to the microphone. And Thundercat hugged her. And she walks over to the microphone. She's like, oh, okay, all right. Well, I just want to say that I'm a singer. And then immediately Thundercat was like, oh, no, 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 no. And she's like, I just want to sing one song. That's it. And immediately they start pulling her off the stage. And she's like fighting it like, no, just one song. And it's like kind of one of the most overprivileged things I've ever seen in my life. But like,
did she care in it? Was she?
Yeah, she kind of was. Yeah, it was like really funny. That just reminded me of it because it was like a very strange, like, no, I just want to sing one song. Like, that was her fucking shot. Like, anybody gave a shit who she was. Like,
yeah,
somebody that doesn't understand that celebrity status has nothing to do with talent. Sorry to tell. Sorry to explain that to
don't
the
tell
masses.
The celebrities that. Yeah. So before we wrap up the Chop Away review, did you have any other thoughts about Sandman as per our previous episode?
Oh, man. The show's so fucking good. and I got to say, I don't think there's like one miscast so far that I can see. Like, everybody does such a wonderful job.
Okay, so I'll say this. I love the actress that's doing Death.
Mm-hmm.
But as a, and I mentioned this the previous episode, but I'll mention it again, that I loved Sandman. So I read Watchmen first, right, as the first comic book I ever read. I was like 16, didn't make a bunch of sense, but I knew it was really good. The second thing I ever read was Sandman. So those books are just like, so, like, I hold so close to me. I cherish them, right? So a part of me really wanted to see Death portrayed as it was in the book, but now that I've seen what the actress is doing, they like 100% know the character like that. And that's the thing, that's a common theme throughout the show, is like everybody's so perfectly cast. Like, I cannot complain about anybody. So I loved this version of Death. It was amazing just to watch this character who is playing the exact opposite of what you expect Death to be, right? She's thoughtful, she's caring, she's bubbly goth girl, right?
That's basically
the exact opposite of what Death is supposed to be. And I just think that, like, it was super happy to see it finally in, on, you know, TV, film, whatever. So that one little part of me would have loved to have seen it actually portrayed, at see that character on the screen. That was like a big dream of mine, but I do love what is actually on, what they did.
Yeah. So the show is fucking fantastic, but it's like the episode we talked about in our previous episode that we definitely recorded a week ago, not 45 minutes ago.
A week and 45 minutes ago.
was, in my opinion, some of the best television I'd seen in, decades, I would say. Like, I don't know. It's like, for me, it's on par with like the end of Severance, you know, just as an episode alone. It was so wonderful. That's why I got to keep going back to that one. But that's not taken away from the other episodes, which are fucking awesome. Like, what's his face? The guy from Harry Potter. I forgot his name. But that actor, that whole, when he finally gets, was it a whole standalone episode of him fucking with these people's lives in the diner? Yeah. Before he, like, eventually dies. Well, he doesn't die. He just sleeps forever.
Yeah. So essentially dying. What's great about one thing I will say, that, and since, you know, I was comparing adaptations and stuff, One thing I'll mention is that in the book, that character is much colder and much unlikable. He's more villainous. Mm. In this one, I think the show actively tried to make him a little more sympathetic. Like in one of the episodes, he takes a ride from that woman.
Yeah, right? I would say.
And they have a long conversation. So I hope this is not a spoiler or anything, but in the book, they have almost exact same conversation. But at the end of it, when he gets dropped off at the diner, he like shoots her and like kills her without even thinking about it. This one, you can kind of see it plays out much differently. And I thought that was a nice way to kind of...
Which I don't think it would play out the way... Because in the book... Because I do kind of remember that. I feel like the book... It was easier to accept these things because of the artwork and the way it was worded. It wasn't as... You know, the writing wasn't completely there because it seemed almost like stream of consciousness. It's like very early Neil Gaiman.
Right.
So it's like weird and...
He admitted that this was like the first like comic book he's ever wrote or adapted. So he was still figuring out the medium itself. So this was, he admitted himself like, he was still struggling to like, how do I write this in issue form?
Real quick, talking about writers, I saw that movie, which I was about to suggest we review, but I've already seen it, so it doesn't matter. Day Shift. With Jamie Foxx and James Franco.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it is actually a lot of fun as like a campy movie. You know, you don't expect anything from it, just like a cheesy movie. It's fucking great. And in my head, I was like, this has got like David Goyer written all over it, but I don't think he had anything to do with it. And then on the Vice, on the flip side of that, David Goyer is one of the writers of this show, Sandman. And it's fucking brilliant.
One of the producers, yeah. That's interesting. David Goyer famously wrote one of the best, like they edited that whole club scene in Blade, one of the best actual badass scenes,
which I used to be I kind of still am, but I was like a David Goyer hater. I was like, man, this guy just makes like shit and people fucking eat
rightfully
it.
So
he's like such a crap writer, but he's gotten so much better. I don't know, I think he just knows the right people to hire and the right people to tell him, like, that's stupid. You know that, right?
Yeah, I mean, he came from the comic book world and, like, he adapted Blade and he did the screenwriting thing. And I think that he's been producing for a long while. And I think he's finally, like, turned into an excellent producer. I mean, he definitely sees that he's done a terrific job of adapting the Sandman so far. Yeah. So. That was Sandman Break in TV Corner of Chapel 8,
real quick,
episode
sorry.
7.
I was going to say, the writing, whatever, I think it was easier to accept then, but I feel like in this adapted TV version, it only makes sense for this character to be fucked up because as a kid, he was given this ruby, and then this like ruby that was like dreams, like a big chunk of his power... fucked him up and corrupted him because like no human should have this ability. But I think his source of sympathy comes from his mother being so cold until the very end. I think this actor did a brilliant job of understanding what sort of emotions would come from like his mother finally doing like a 180 and being like, no, I did this because I loved you.
Mm-hmm.
And then him being like, well, I wanted to hate you, but now I understand, sort of, but like he's still fucked up. I don't know. Yeah, that's great. It's good shit.
They did a good job of giving that particular character like layers and like different, a pretty understandable perspective from what his behavior is, right? So,
yeah.
No, they did a great job. They did a really excellent job with that character. So I think for now on, we're going to do TV Corner. But we're going to have a Sandman break.
We're totally going to do that.
Do TV Corner.
All right, introduce the movie. I am not stepping away to grab another beer or water, I mean. I will be right back.
So,
I'll give you the plot. And
So 13 Ghosts is released in 2001, magical year. And... John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Real quick, I think I work with people that were born that year.
God, dude. You're killing me.
Yeah, actually, yes. Because what? Somebody born in 2001 would be 20 this year? 21?
I don't.
21. Soon. 20.
21 soon.
Math.
Okay.
Math. Quick math. Yes.
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Steve Beck, who would a year later give you Ghost Ship.
Ghost Shit?
Yeah. Ghost Shit. Ghost Ship, another one of my favorite sort of this era horror movies. It's like, I yep. fucking love that movie. You get a yeah. fucking young Carl Urban. Perfect. Coming in at number three, I have early aughts scary bad soundtrack.
Okay.
I could not stand that fucking soundtrack.
It has Tricky. You don't remember Tricky? He was on everybody's soundtrack.
But it was Tricky with, yeah, I love Tricky because he was like unofficially a part of Massive Attack, which was another one of my favorite bands. That one song also has backing vocals by Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, but I think the same IMDb page.
but I think the song I'm thinking of is the other one, the one that actually plays throughout most of the movie, that shitty hip hop song that's like,
oh my how God. Dare you? That is Raya Digga, who is one of our mini stars, who plays Maggie, the memorable Maggie Bess.
Yeah,
so. There you go. You're wrong.
I am so wrong. Sorry.
Continue.
they both kind of suck, which is funny because, like, honestly, I own a couple of Tricky albums on CD because that's how much I like them. Who also, Tricky, famously, or maybe not famously, was the guy that was pretending to be Corbin Dallas in fucking Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember that scene where he goes up.
Oh,
like,
I remember.
Oh, I'm Corbin Dallas. Oh, what? No. Oh, come on. Like, nothing happens to him, but he's just kind of there. All right. And coming in at number two for 13 Ghosts, THI13EN Ghosts. Flamboyant entrepreneur loves the drama. Yep. I didn't realize how fucking melodramatic he was upon reviewing this movie. It's like, whoa, dude.
F. Murray Abraham is like the stand-in for what's his name? Vincent Price.
Yeah.
If I'm not correct. And woo! F. Murray Abraham. Was Vincent Price in that? I don't think Vincent Price was in this movie, was he?
No, I think it was too early. I think this is like early 50s.
So it's just William Castle directed it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, but without saying, F. Murray Abraham is electric in this movie. Dude.
Yeah. He's a legend. He's a fucking, like, in my head, he's a legend. Like, he's a fucking actor that I love watching. But it's like, I think pretty early on when I saw him in a Loaded Weapon, and he was playing Anthony Hopkins going like, and instead of saying some Chianti and some fava beans, I forgot what he says, but he goes, and it just like every time I see him talk, I'm waiting for him to do that. I mean, also because probably I watch Loaded Weapon once a year, so it's probably always fresh in my mind. Which if you don't know what Loaded Weapon is, it's an old National Lampoon's movie making fun of Lethal Weapon. With Emilio Estevez and Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. Wilderness Boys.
Yeah. Gratuitous beaver shot, and they just put like a stuffed beaver in between the actress's legs.
Yeah.
All right. And coming in at number one for 13 Ghosts, single dad ghosted by wife.
That's excellent. That's it. We can end the podcast now. I don't think we're going to top that. Yeah. Let's just end it. We're done. Let's just wrap it up.
Oh, man. This movie has it all. Like, I forgot Sheila. I forgot her real name.
Yeah.
Beth Davids.
Yep.
Sheila from this is my favorite horror movie franchise, Army of Darkness, plays Ash's love interest, and she becomes evil, and she's Sheila. Which Sam Raimi has quoted on saying she was like an actor's actor, basically saying she was a little bit difficult to work with because she didn't like to have as much fun as everybody else.
Oh,
you know,
interesting. She's having a lot of fun in this movie.
Oh my God.
She,
yeah.
Who made you God? Well, one of the most memorable lines of any movie.
God, we got Shannon Elizabeth, which was like my first like awkward feeling crush.
Awkward.
Because of American Pie. It was like my first like you know what, fuck it. The first Playboy I ever got, she was like the main person in it.
Okay.
Bam.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I wanted to marry
her. What's awkward about it? I mean, I think it's pretty evident what's might be interesting about her.
The boners, Rolando. The boners.
The boners.
They were awkward.
So I decided to, as part of this remake series, I decided to pick 13 Ghosts because I vividly remember watching this in the theater and thinking, I could tell it wasn't great, but I was like, it wasn't that bad. I remember leaving the theater then and thinking, eh, it wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't a great movie. But I was kind of more pro of what I believe, what's his name, Joel Silver and Robert Zemeckis. They started Dark Castle Pictures, which is sort of like they started remaking all of like classic horror movies, right? Like William Castle's classic horror movies like House on Haunted Hill. I think even a few years before that, we saw The Haunting. We saw 13 Ghosts finally a couple of years later. And I was thinking, what a fun idea of bringing old classic movies, remaking them, bringing them to like a modern audience. I was like, that's a really cool, fun idea. And so that was sort of my inception of watching it, thinking it was okay. So many decades passed. So of recently, the reason why this movie's even on my brain at all was because somebody at work was saying that this was their favorite movie. I was like, really? He's like, yeah.
Wow.
They were like, this
I've gotten that
movie
before too. That's so weird. Yeah.
Like this.
People have told me that. Yeah.
That it scared the shit out of them. That they can't watch.
Oh, I didn't guess that.
Like,
but
really?
Yeah, yeah.
That and so I was just like, okay. Well, maybe I've been wrong all these years. Yeah,
so,
about this movie.
I mean, this movie is popular enough to even be referenced in Cabin in the Woods, you know?
Okay, I don't remember that.
I think there's several characters that like kind of odes to like some of these ghosts, like these in particular, like the Jackal and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is one thing.
They all have names. I don't know. Did you ever rent the DVD or buy the DVD and it came with the extra DVD? And there's a whole backstory behind each of these ghosts that they gave you a little story about, like comic book written, but it was still like animated. And then on top of that, there was like more in-depth analysis of the writings on the walls, which are obviously vinyl decals, but you know, whatever. But yeah, I think Steve Beck he put a lot of work into this because this movie could have been complete shit, but I think he perfectly cast it. I mean, the writing's not amazing, but
that's an understatement.
Yeah, the production quality is great because the design is fucking like amazing, except for the CG. But like the Greg Nicotero is one of the fucking
early.
Yeah,
I want to say early Greg Nicotero. I mean, I'm sure Nicotero's been around forever, but like this is something that he did. For me personally, like I remember seeing these ghosts, and they all have like sort of what Greg does, right?
He's very specific, modern,
like practical designs, and very memorable. I feel like for all 12 of them, they all are very distinct.
Yes,
you know, they all distinct looks.
Because I think he is he's been with Savini for a while. He had been with Savini. I think this is one of the early, he's one of the head makeup artists. He's like one of the head designers of it or whatever.
Right. And he, did an excellent job. I think all the ghosts, like I said, are the again, I would say like any of the design of the house of the ghosts are still amazing to look at. They're like, I think the way they're used, the way they're shot, the way they're designed, even some of the kills are nice in this movie.
Yeah.
That aspect, and I think that has, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably Greg.
Yeah, probably.
Guy has consistently, of recent, has been proven to be like the shit he's did on The Walking Dead, right? Like, yeah. There's so many things that he's done with makeup and special effects or whatever, right? That he is like a master, right? He's a master of his time. And this is definitely something, if you're a fan of his, The Walking Dead, if you're a Walking Dead fan, if you see this, this is a movie you can go watch some of his earliest stuff. And it's very pronounced. And probably, honestly, the best part of this movie. I feel like the idea of the house and it being kind of like a haunted house kind of thrill ride movie works.
Yeah.
Where every other aspect of this movie fails, right? Like the writing is terrible. Directing yeah. Seems questionable, right? I believe this was his first feature.
I want to say, it definitely was. I want to say the direction, I think, would have been presented better if the editors were better. The editing is fucking atrocious at some parts.
Right.
Like, we're getting a cut of the same exact thing from a different angle, and it's like, why did you even put that in? And then it's got a very early Marvel fight scene sort of thing where it cuts to different things real quick for some of the stuff, and it's like, okay. I think one of the biggest complaints about this movie was it was too strobey. Yeah. And that's the editing. It's like,
There's also, I could have sworn, I read in the IMDb trivia that there was supposed to be like a 3D tie into this, because of course, like, all of these actors to see the ghosts, they were really ridiculous.
I was gonna bring that up. There's so many moments, there's so many scenes in this movie where I was like, was this a fucking 3D movie? Because, like,
I thought it was.
Yeah, there's too many things flying at the screen. I'm like, okay.
So I thought this was a 3D movie, and I could have sworn it was when I saw it originally in theaters. But yeah. reading on IMDb, apparently they scrapped it at the last minute.
Oh,
I was like, really? I could swear, what movie did I watch was in 3D then? Because that seemed like the way they set it up. The gimmick. So part of the gimmick of the original 1960s was that it had a 3D glasses gimmick to it.
Yeah.
And so that would have been like the perfect tie-in for this movie, which I thought was a huge missed opportunity for the time. And I will say that, again, like, I feel like this whole like glass house construction was like, I feel like that's like a almost like something they might have during Halloween nights or something, right? Like, it's like a thrill, right? It's like a spectacle within itself.
Yeah.
On top of what the ghosts represent.
Oh, and the glass, two things about it. One, like, was this like tempered glass from lava? Like, why didn't they just break through the fucking glass? But two, when they're carrying that glass piece, a shout out to the fucking, like, I don't know, construction or props, or I don't know who built that thing, but like, clearly it wasn't real glass, because otherwise we should have seen Tony Shalhoub and Matthew Lillard just like dripping buckets of fucking sweat, because glass is not light.
So let's shout out Tony Shalhoub. What is Tony Shalhoub doing in this movie? The guy is an amazing actor.
Matthew Lillard and Tony Shalhoub were acting fucking circles around these people, and that's because Matthew Lillard was trying to ham it up a little bit, but he was still very, you believed him.
I'm of two thoughts here. So Matthew Lillard, I feel like, has become a great actor. Like, you watch him now. I recently saw him in The Descendants.
He's fucking
and he's amazing.
He's
in it.
Wonderful,
he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's so nuanced in his performance, and he has an excellent part in it. And he plays a very unlikable person in that movie, but he delivers an excellent performance. I feel like this is very early on. This must have been like maybe within the 5-year period after Scream came out, maybe 5+ years.
Yeah,
the original Scream movie, and so I think that type of acting got over so much. Maybe he felt like he had to be that character, which is, I feel like, sort of comes through this performance.
Well, I would argue I'd buy that he is somebody that thinks he's unlikable and he's just an awkward guy because he's basically Haley Joel Osment his entire life. You know?
In my opinion, I think he makes some really big choices. And there's actually some nice understated moments, too, that I think really work for what he's doing with this part. Yeah.
With that, I can't forgive Steve Beck, and I can't forgive the editors for making him clean his glasses for, like, six hours at the end when he's a ghost. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
but he's, like, cleaning his glasses the entire time. Like, oh, yeah, you just gotta go do this. And he's, like, fucking cleaning his glasses.
And like I feel like Shannon Elizabeth is giving nothing in this part. It's a nothing part. Unfortunately,
she was just a hot commodity at the time,
right? And I think if it says that F. Murray Abraham also did this movie for the money, he admits it. So fair enough.
Not surprised at all.
he gave it everything.
Yeah,
he showed up to work. I will say that F. Murray Abraham shows up to work.
Oh, man, can we just go into spoilers so we can talk about the movie in its entirety real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to spoilers.
Wait! No, stop, stop, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
I fucking love that he had all the time in the world, but I guess he's trying to present that he's still a ghost. So he left the cut-neck makeup on... with the tie that was cut off too, so the tie is like hanging off to one side.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
But yeah, no, exactly.
Getting back to Matthew Lillard, what a treasure. One of the most memorable lines in Scream is he's on the phone after he's gotten stabbed several times by Skeet Ulrich, and Neve Campbell is just like fucking with him, and he says like, hey, you didn't call the police, did you? And Neve Campbell's like, you bet your ass I fucking did. And he's like, my parents are gonna be so pissed, and he falls down. That was ad-lib by him, and he went in 100%, and Wes Craven thought it was so funny that he just kept it in the movie.
I believe like Matthew Lillard is a very talented actor.
Yeah,
he's Shaggy. I think that he this role, I think that he was, in my opinion, like, kind of felt like he had to do a certain performance. It wasn't till, in my opinion, much later he became more nuanced and more thoughtful and as an actor. But he's giving his all. You can't say he's phoning it in.
Yeah.
At all, either. So.
let me go back to, this movie's got a bunch of, like, really fun stuff. Like, the beginning where they're tracking down that ghost that's, like, and in my head, I keep forgetting that this tall, lumbering, like, lurch type of ghost is in the movie.
Yeah.
I kept thinking it was a dude with the spikes and the hammer, the spikes that are all in his head. I kept thinking that was the first ghost they caught, and I kept thinking that was the one that killed Matthew Lillard. But mm-hmm. It's this ghost that looks like Lurch from the Munsters, or the Adam Sandler, I mean.
That ghost was called the Juggernaut, I think.
The Juggernaut, yeah. So Juggernaut, the Jackal, the something Prince, right?
The princess,
the big baby and the little mom. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
After that happens, and then what was his name in the movie? What was F. Murray? Cyrus gets quote unquote killed. There's Tony Shalhoub has presented this laptop to watch a video that Cyrus recorded for him. Like, hello, nephew. I know we haven't been kept in touch. One of my biggest regrets in the world is not keeping in touch. This is my atonement to you, giving you this house. And then screenshots off. And then almost like he's live fucking streaming it, he pops back up. The video pops back up. He's like, oh, also, I can't wait to meet you, blah, blah, blah. Like, something about, like, I'm dying to meet you or something like that. It's something really stupid. But I thought that was fucking hilarious. Like, he was live streaming it as opposed to recorded it. Because who the hell, right, like, records it? In the grand scheme of things, the lawyer should have been like, hold on, there's one more video. Stop. Press play again on this one. Also, nephew. You know, I just thought this was so cheesy and funny.
It's like, and at the time, you had to like wait a little bit so QuickTime could load.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, oh my God, there's a bunch of moments in this movie that made me really laugh because I was like, this didn't even make sense back then. It doesn't make sense now.
I know. I feel that way about Hackers. I loved Hackers.
Oh, yes. Makes
no sense as a computer movie whatsoever. That's a movie that needs to be redeemed. That's the remake I want to see. Hackers.
That's the remake America needs.
Hackers. Angelina Jolie, the early part. Come on, man. Let's get her back in. She could be that hacker mom or something.
So to truthfully spoil this movie, Cyrus is still alive, gets picked up by all the ghosts at once for some reason. And then gets thrown into this machine that was supposed to bring...
Hell?
Question
it's the Chapelet thing.
Yeah.
It's the bring all evil.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he gets like slashed into a bunch of pieces and they get flung to the screen. One of those moments where I was like, was this a 3D movie? And then Matthew Lillard turns into a ghost. And as a ghost, his atonement is he's like, got to forever clean his glasses. he's telling Tony Shalhoub, hey, why don't you just jump into this thing that cut up your uncle into a billion pieces so you can be with your family and save them. Because that's the only way for you to survive, I think. And he does it. He survives. And then their mom is there and says, like, I love you guys. She disappears without... She just goes away. And then the other ghosts, the other 12 ghosts, or, like, the 11 ghosts, I guess, go out and just disappear into the world again to go on and... I don't know.
Let's go to In-N-Out.
Let's go get some shawarma. And there was the after credit scene. And I guess like they're going to go on and kill more people again. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. Because they were, I mean, like you said, Juggernaut killed a lot of people in the opening scene. So I'm pretty sure he's going back to killing people.
Yeah, he's going to go back to his, what was that place? The junkyard and... Just keep murdering people.
I guess. But yeah, there.
Oh, that part was funny. So Matthew Lillard's like a seer, right? And he's like, he touches the ground and he's like, oh, what was that? Like they're all yelling because they're outside, I guess. I don't know. Oh, what was that? He said there was only 8 victims and there's like 40 something. He's like, well, he's killed. He's added a few more after death.
Like, okay. Dude, there are just that first 10 minutes alone has some beautiful lines in it that I should have written down, but I did not. There's some good choices there. The other thing I want to quickly mention that I liked was that I kind of like that he is he can see people's thoughts, right? What is he? Like a psychic. He's psychic, right? Is that the idea?
That's why, I mean, because I'm not sure. That's why I call him a seer, because it seems like he does a bunch of things.
Right, yeah.
Like he was able to foretell his own death.
I kind of like that the character could do that, that he can touch people and see. To me, that rang true, and I think whatever Matthew Lillard is doing is interesting.
Yeah.
So that was... Because he kept telling people, stop, don't touch me, don't touch me.
Because
he'll fucking freak out, he'll spaz out like he's doing. Oh, wait, that's not an appropriate word, right? I'll give you another word for that, John.
Oh, yeah, and one thing I should point out is, I'm sorry, costume designer or maybe prop master, but the tags for, what was it, something power, wasn't even like a clever name for the electric company.
Oh, yeah,
it was like fucking horrible.
Power up.
Yeah. Look terrible.
He had a orange jumpsuit straight out of Halloween Spirit.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, it wasn't great. But yeah, no, this was... I think if you're in the right, you know... What is it? Like the right frame of mind?
Yeah.
Maybe about four beers in, sitting with your friends and watching it.
You know what? If you're in a silly mood, this is a perfect movie.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah. Interesting remake. Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones. Ooh,
sexy bones. Well, I know what you do.
Show us your
sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give 13 ghosts.
Whoa.
That's no, sexy. I'm just saying the title. 13 ghosts.
Okay.
5.8 sexy, spooky, ghostly bones.
Yeah, I think it's a 5. It's a nice 5. This was fun. It wasn't what I mean, it wasn't what I remembered, but it was still, I think there's a lot of fun to be had in this movie. An underappreciated movie, I think. In some respects. Other respects, I think people have it right.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the editing's terrible. I just can't mention that enough. It's terrible.
Poorly written characters are unlikable or not relatable. Most of the characters say annoying things. I don't know. There's a lot of shit going on. But Tony Shalhoub's in it, so.
And he is by far the best actor in the movie.
Oh, right.
He is the only believable straight guy in the movie.
When he tripped and spilled coffee on himself and his reaction to it, oh my God, like, give this guy the Oscar. He's so good.
And then Shannon Elizabeth gets is, like, she gets attacked by the jackal, and then her shirt becomes just like, let's see your bra and boobs.
Let's get 5 angles of your chest.
Yeah. I was like, dude, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. As it slowly gets ripped and revealed. Yeah, it was pretty... Very 2000s. That's what it was like living in the 2000s.
Yeah. And oh, you know what? Before we, I know this is becoming a longer episode, but the kid's voice was bugging me so fucking much.
Oh, yeah.
It sounded like an adult was overdubbing his fucking lines to sound like a kid. And it was bugging the shit out of me. It was like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, he basically sounded exactly like what I'm doing right now. Like, oh, is that a mom?
I feel bad. So this kid only really acted in this, and I don't want to call him out or anything, but he had to describe his delivery. It was New Jersey lisp. He had he had like large spiky hair, a lisp, and he sounded like he's from New Jersey. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's what I got.
And Raw Digger was not my favorite part of the movie. Again, that is stand the test of time.
Yeah. Rod, unfortunately, I feel like this character was so poorly written. And there's so many...
They needed a person of color to be in the film that wasn't a ghost. Is basically what it happened.
I know. And that's something I don't know if how far we want to dig into that, because I mean, it's a caricature, right? She's lazy at her job. She complains all the time. She says smart ass things. I mean, this is pretty like bad writing.
Oh my God. And I gotta say,
offensive.
Pretty much this could be a document of the time, but all the women in this were like stick thin.
Yeah. And plot contrivances, and they were not very intelligently written. They were mostly dumb, and there's a lot of wrong. There's a lot of really bad.
Not a terribly progressive movie. Let's put it that way.
Not a terribly progressive movie. Kind of icky and uncomfortable. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky, man. Oh, that's my Matthew Lillard.
Matthew Lillard's on the show.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.